So this is the setting. This is the very simple. This is the very natural. This is almost the humble setting for the astounding, for the staggering discourse that follows. There are no signs. There are no wonders. No miracles. No lights appearing in the sky. Everything is so simple, so natural, so ordinary. And what does this mean? What does this simplicity mean? What does this naturalness mean? This ordinariness mean? Because it certainly means something. Every word in the sutra means something. And only too often people skip over the introductions just to get at the meat of the sutra, as it were, and they miss half the significance of the whole thing. Because, as I've observed in some other connection, I think in connection with the Heart Sutra, the frame here is part of the picture, and it shouldn't be ignored. So this simplicity, this naturalness of the introduction describing the opening scene of the sutra means that reality is to be experienced in the midst of everyday life, ordinary life, everyday life, because there's just nowhere else to experience it. If you are to experience reality anywhere, it can only be here. If you are to experience it at any time, it can only be now. So it's here and now. Don't let one's attention be diverted to higher heavenly worlds. Yes, the symbolism is very beautiful, it's very meaningful, but don't misunderstand it. It's here and it's now that we have to realize, that we have to see, that we have to attain. So it also means this simple description, this opening scene of the sutra. It means that ultimately reality, transcendental reality, and everyday life are non-different. You don't have to get away from the conditioned in order to realize the unconditioned. It's the conditioned in its depth which is the unconditioned. Or as the Heart Sutra says, form is emptiness, i.e. reality, and emptiness is form. Our everyday life may be whatever it may be. It may be pleasurable, it may be painful. It may be wildly ecstatic, or it may be unbearably agonizing. Or again, it may be just plain dull and boring most of the time. But it is here, in the midst of all these experiences, good, bad and indifferent, pleasurable, painful and neutral, it's in the midst of all these experiences and nowhere else that enlightenment, that Buddhahood, is to be attained. And this is what the introduction to the sutra, in its own way, is trying to tell us. And in a sense, this is the whole message of the sutra, the whole message of the Diamond Sutra. And perhaps we really need not go any further than this. If we grasp this, if we understand this, if we take this as the message that the Diamond Sutra is trying to communicate to us, or that the Buddha is trying to communicate to us in the Diamond Sutra, then perhaps it will be quite enough, and we need not go, as I've said, any further. However, for the sake at least of formal completeness, let us proceed. Another point is that the Buddha delivers the Diamond Sutra in the open air. Now, have we ever noticed this? Those of us who've read the sutra, have we ever considered the significance of this fact, that the Buddha habitually taught in the open air? Now, here are we sitting in a room and listening to a talk, listening to a discourse. But this is not what happened in the Buddha's day. The Buddha himself habitually, as I've said, taught in the open air. He and his disciples lived, in fact, for the most part, in the open air. For 9 months of the year, they wandered about from place to place, on foot, of course. They wandered through forests. They took their time. They rested under trees. They meditated under trees. They climbed mountains. They crossed rivers. Sometimes they went into villages, usually just once a day to collect food. Sometimes they might go in to preach and to teach. And then only for some 3 or 4 months of the year at most, during the rainy season, when one couldn't go around very easily, did they stay indoors. And even then, what did indoors mean? It didn't mean a house. Indoors meant in a cave, or in a hut in somebody's garden, or maybe on the outskirts of the forest. So how simple was life in those days? One just had, if one was a monk, one's three robes and one's bowl, and that was all you needed, huh? To get by with. Perhaps also a needle and a water strainer. Hmm? There were no houses for one. There were no mortgages. Hmm? No telephone or telephone bills. No television. No refrigerator. Hmm? No car. Hmm? No radio. No newspapers. No books. Not even the Diamond Sutra. Hmm? So life being simpler, thinking was simpler too. Minds in those days were uncluttered, they were undistracted, and great truths were more easily, surely, apprehended. So we ought to be aware of all this, aware of the great part that life in the open air played in the lives of the Buddha and his disciples. Now we should be aware of this not so as to discourage ourselves, of course, not so as to make us think that it was easy then to develop transcendental wisdom, but difficult if not impossible now. No, we should be aware of this so that we can realize perhaps how many factors have arisen between us and enlightenment since the Buddha's day. Factors which are not part of the normal human existence, but rather of a highly artificial way of life.